Yes, we are talking trade. We're talking all sorts of things. The happiest man in the world is Roger Montgomery normally. I wonder how he is tonight. Actually, your house isn't too far from those fires in Sydney at this point in time, correct?
In fact, before coming into the studio, I just spoke to my wife just to check that everything was okay. I asked her to have a look out from the bedroom, and it's all okay so far.
Everything was not said. You know, well, the fire brigade says that it is actually contained within the national park, so
yes.
Hopefully it stays there as well.
Well, Ross, I'm a bit disturbed by all the news that you're reporting today. You know, you've got the cyclone in Queensland. We've got fires in Sydney. Yeah. On top of that, there are floods in Victoria. We've got droughts in Perth. And Australia's the fourth largest exporter of wheat to the world. And unfortunately, the fact that we've got less wheat and less of a lot of things means the price of food is going to go up. We're going to see price of oil going up. And I'm going to talk about why.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's an interesting thing. But surely, though, I know that the Lockyer Valley being wiped out is going to affect a lot of food production in Australia. I know certainly those river systems through some of our most fertile soils will wipe out a lot of food production as well. And you've seen the report from IBIS yesterday suggesting here that some fruit and vegetable prices will be up by 80%. 80%.
Yep.
In the course of the next little while.
Near doubling. That's going to hit the hip pocket.
But that's going to be that should hopefully be a short-term blip so that they hopefully will come down next year.
But it's a bigger issue, Ross. The prices for things like wheat and cotton and soybean oil.
Cotton, though, affected by the floods.
Yes, as well. But it's not just in Australia.
We've got issues. 440 year, something ridiculous like that?
40-year highs in cotton. We've got 40-year highs in cotton. But let's look. We've got the worst flood in 200 years in some parts of Australia. We've got heightened volcanic activity globally. In Queensland, 41 of 73 municipalities are regarded as being in a state of natural disaster. Meteorologists have said that the European winter was the coldest in 100 years.
Which has pushed up oil prices.
Which has pushed up oil
prices. $92 a barrel. Wacko.
South America, hot and dry. China, its wheat production is going to be severely dented by the fact that they've had 90% less rain than previous years.
Australia's coal production is going to be well down because of the floods.
The biggest reaction, the biggest dry they've had in Kansas, which is the nation's largest winter wheat growing area.
What's all this add up to?
Okay, well, what this means is we're going to get higher food prices. Okay, so food prices have already been going up, but I actually think it's only just started. Now, what this means is that it's something that politicians can't control. And where they haven't been popularly elected, so where you've got an autocracy or you've got a dictatorship, then what you'll find is people will become increasingly unhappy with that arrangement. We saw the president of Tunisia toppled. We're seeing problems in Egypt now. We're going to see more problems. And revolutions are a bit like dominoes, Ross. So they spread around. So the next countries on the list are countries like Algeria, Libya, Morocco, Jordan, Pakistan. And that instability will only add fuel to the fire of oil prices.
Okay, but then markets that you actually look at and commentate on and make decisions about, they don't like instability. They like things to be, you know, status quo, so they can get on with making their money and so economies are growing, all this type of thing.
Yeah, they don't like volatility.
But the truth is, if there's positive change through that volatility, then quite clearly they're very happy if they can see, say, for example, the Berlin Wall come down and they can see unification, then they can open up new markets in Serbia or wherever it might be in the Eastern Bloc. And, of course, they've all made a lot of money out of that type of thing.
Sure.
This is the potential other side of what you're talking about.
Well, this is unhappy instability. Not happy instability. So what we're talking about is food prices that are going to cause people to have riots. You know, people are going to riot over food. It's going to be worse than we saw in 2008.
But we actually manufacture. We are net exporters of food. Now, okay, a lot of people will say the farmers are getting screwed at the moment, and there's no doubt there's a very strong view. Nick Xenophon was on this program last night talking about exactly that point.
Sure.
Anybody who wants to jump in and have a comment about this, 131873, Roger and I, happy to have a debate with you about it.
Absolutely.
But the truth is that because of that, you want to make certain that you are holding on to as much of your food capacity and manufacturing ability as you can right now, simply because if the world's going through a short supply, you want to make as much of it as you possibly can.
Yeah, look, that's that, and an idealist would agree with you. But in reality, we've got trade terms with other countries that actually force us to export some of our production. I mean, we import tomatoes, yet we produce more than enough for ourselves.
Yes.
And we still import them because we're exporting a whole bunch. You know, our best tuna goes overseas. We don't keep it here. So what we've got is a global...
That seems reasonable to me that we export our very best tuna.
You're getting the better prices overseas.
Right.
Okay, so here's the issue. If a farmer can get a better price for his crop somewhere else than Australia, he's going to sell it for the highest price. And that's why we get prices globally that generally, you know, it's all one price. And because of the globalisation and the trade that we have.
Well, that's not dissimilar to our petrol prices here. For example, we were talking about petrol and oil earlier on.
Yeah.
Surely that
I've got more to say about that.
Surely that if, say, for example, we are importing our petrol, not just oil, but petrol from Asia, from the Asian refineries, and about 30% of our petrol comes in from Asia, that effectively sets the benchmark price for wholesale prices here in Australia.
Yeah, absolutely.
So therefore, the same would happen for tomatoes, the same would happen for rice, wheat, or anything else.
Well, here's the thing. Very recently, the Saudi oil minister raised the upper limit of his oil price, what he calls his comfort range. Now, these guys control 2/3 of the world's excess crude oil capacity. So you really have to pay attention to what they're saying. Now, previously, they had a range estimate of $70 to $80. They're now saying $70 to $90. The price is already there.
IEA, it's gone beyond that, $92 this afternoon.
That's right. The International Energy Agency came out and recently said that conventional crude oil production peaked, global production peaked at 70 million barrels per day back in 2006.
But that's about the peak oil argument. I've always said this, and this is one thing that you and I have talked about on this program a lot, and that is that really long term, given the fact that the world is running out of energy and it requires energy, the one thing you've got to do when things are in lulls and the economies are turned down, you've got to buy energy.
Well, here's the interesting thing. We've just come out of, the Western world has come out of a recession, Australia, with the exception of Australia.
Which, you know, was in
the Western world,
semantics anyway.
The Western world's coming out of a recession, so we've had very slow growth in the Western world, and yet the oil price never fell below $80 a barrel. And so what we've got now is, as the Western world emerges out of its growth, and China, demand from China, energy demand from China may well change oil market expectations forever, because growth in oil demand, 75% of that growth is going to come out of Asia and
China. So what does that mean? We've just got to buy oil stocks as much as we possibly can. Shouldn't we been buying, say, for example, here, should we been buying BP when, of course, they had their massive Gulf of Mexico disaster, which was the height of embarrassment for BP, which was beyond petroleum with a lovely little flower. Well, BP, of course, has now had an annual loss of $4.9 billion, its first annual loss since 1992. It made a profit the previous year of $13.9 billion, so it's gone backwards by the best part of, $19 billion in a year. So you've got to sit there and say that they were really trying to write off everything. We should have been buying those shares when they're on the bones of their backside.
Well, here's one we have talked about on the show, and I've mentioned it on my blog for some time. It listed in December the year before, a little company called Matrix Composite and Engineering. It manufactures flotation devices, buoyancy devices for deep sea oil rigs, and it's gone up sixfold since it floated. So there are opportunities in this particular market. But let me say this for consumers. $1.50 a litre for petrol, done deal. $1.60, $1.70 this year, probably.
Seriously?
And higher, possibly.
You don't think the Aussie dollar is going to have an impact on that?
Well, it hasn't yet.
Well, yeah, I guess so. But it's really got itself out to $1.40. But that's largely because of a lack of refining capacity in Asia. From Asia coming through. And also, fair to say, that the actual raw material, the oil, has gone up because of a cold European winter. But the idea was you always bought heating oil, you know, in November on the bet that there was going to be a cold European winter. Then oil futures went up, and just before the summer you dropped it, and then you bought it just before the driving season in North America. That was always the way that people made
Ross,
money.
I hope you're right, but long term, look, I'm no good at predicting these things short term, but I'm very, very comfortable that long term we're going to see much, much higher oil prices, higher than they were in the previous peak.
All right, so therefore, as a result, what are you going to buy?
Well, again, a company called Matrix Composite and Engineering.
That's all you're going to buy.
Well,
you're not going to go and buy BP. You're not going to go and buy anybody who's got all the oil or all the energy. Why wouldn't you buy them?
Well, I think long term they're running out of the stuff, so it doesn't matter
is. No, they've got it, because the truth is, it doesn't matter if they're running out of it. They've actually got it, and so the prices will go higher, and therefore production will make.
But as you know, long term, I think there are companies that are running out. There are oil fields that will run out long before the price reaches its peak.
Yes, I'd agree with that. But surely you should have energy in your portfolio because the world, regardless of what happens, is going to need energy.
Well, how about it's going to need heating. How about we come back next week and we look at some oil companies and we decide amongst those companies which we think have the best prospects?
Well, okay, that's a good idea. But the second thing we should do is look at alternatives, because the problem is, we haven't got any Julia Gillard here, but I'll tell you what, the Julia Gillard speech today, which I started the program with, and as I said at the start, I've got a pretty good barometer for when I'm hearing a bit of crap told to me. And sure, this was absolutely political spin of the highest order. Right. You know, this whole vision of this nation beyond the mining boom, right?
Right.
Now, the day that this country does not rely on mining as the backbone of its nation, I'll tell you what, I won't be here. I'll be basically...
Well, unfortunately, we've shipped all of our alternative energy manufacturing offshore. Well, we've got no manufacturing left in this country.
All right, so that's one thing. So the second thing is, the answer to this is to price carbon.
Yeah.
Because this will get Australia beyond the mining boom. And I'm going, hang on, that seems a bit weird, isn't it? So the future is we're going to create this brilliant industry in solar, wind, geothermal, things that currently go to waste.
Roscoe, this sounds, mate...
Yeah, but I'm saying this
you
is...
Don't go and tax, you don't go and tax somebody to produce something else. Encourage the production of something else.
And what got me is what you do is you have a tax to raise the price of the thing you've currently got that's cheap, to actually raise its price to the point at which the things that are currently expensive become of equal price. And I think you're dead set kidding. You are seriously kidding if you're going to do that. What? So you're going to stick a tax on to make your coal-powered, stations more expensive so that other things like wind and solar can compete with them.
If you want to be an alternative energy country and you want to be a knowledge nation, then you've got to keep the smart people here. So when overseas students come and study here in Australia, we're taking our best academics, teaching overseas students how to learn and all about our technology. And then we say, right, you've done with your studies, go back home and compete with us.
Well, I'll tell you what, look, solar, I think, is really a genius thing. But let's be honest. It's not your base load stuff.
Well, you can't fly a plane on it.
The fact that you're correct, and the fact that we're trying to tax the thing that we are efficient and some of the best in the world in, i.e., coal-fired power stations,
sure,
and we're not even talking about bringing in nuclear to replace them, and you just sit there and think, what la-la land are these people living in?
We have the biggest reserves of uranium in the world.
Which we're happy to give away to other people, not give away, we're happy to sell to other people around the world, except for India, who haven't signed the non-proliferation treaty. As I say, this is a rant, but it's not a bad rant to have, because it just seems to me that whole vision is a 100% piece of political spin.
Hey, bottom line, buckle in for higher prices.
Buckle in for higher prices. I've got to say, Roger Montgomery, it's always a pleasure talking to you. By the way, how is your portfolio looking at the moment, can I ask you?
Well, I've just written something up about that. It's been a spectacular year, actually.
Have you had any disasters along the way?
None.
You never talk about your disasters.
We haven't had anything to talk about, but it's been a good year.
It has been, has it?
Mm.
So you still think the notion of value investing is a good idea?
Value investing works.
Yes, okay.
This year will be harder than last year,
but
though.
But there are years when it doesn't work, correct?
Of course there are. There are always years.
Because there are years when momentum starts to work, and that's the idea that you're a momentum investor that actually works well.
But don't follow prices, follow value.
Always follow value. Roger Montgomery, it is always a pleasure to have a chat to you. See? We didn't get a call. We didn't get anybody. We could just have a rant between each other, Roger. I'd love that even more.
People were too interested.
What a lot of rubbish that speech was today by the Prime Minister. Oh, look, I'm a fan of the Prime Minister when she gets feisty and has a bit of a crack and all that sort of stuff. But, God, when she plays politics like that, it gets up my nose. Thank you very much for joining us here on Money News Tonight.